TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
That's right. It is raised by wolves on Score North. We are live on AM 1500 right now. ScoreNorth.com as well. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham here in the TCL broadcast studios. And Danny, before we get into basketball and the Wolves, which is what this show is normally about, I have to ask
sometimes
you.
Sometimes about, not always.
It's true. But I have to ask you, did you read the ESPN story on your beloved Cleveland Browns?
Of the many things going on in my life over the past 24 hours, and let me tell you, it's been a day. Yes, I read about my beloved Cleveland Browns. And
your thoughts?
A lot of it I knew. Like, I knew that the Haslams are just inept. And I know that you are a Haslam fan because you're wearing that block T on your hat right now.
Well, I'm a Tennessee Vols fan, but it has nothing to do with Jimmy Haslam.
Is the owner of the Tennessee Volunteer Football Program as well as the Browns. So I understand your fandom and we're connected in that way because you want him to be successful in football the same way I want him to be successful in football, just in different organizations. I understood that they were inept. I didn't know that they were inept to the point that they necessarily showed in that. The fact that they disobeyed what was recommended in hiring Hugh Jackson makes me hate him more.
That's unbelievable.
But yeah, I wasn't surprised, but it was also kind of eye-opening.
The handshake thing on Teddy Bridgewater to me is just, we talked about that last hour.
Haven't you heard that you can always tell how strong a guy's knees are by his handshake? That is a good move.
It's unbelievable.
They're probably in a better spot today without Teddy Bridgewater than they would have drafted him.
That's true. But, you know, it just, and with that said, I mean, your guy Baker Mayfield is like,
I think he's covering up a lot of things. That article made me feel like he's the only quarterback that could have done this. It made me feel like he is the only quarterback in the NFL or that the Browns could have drafted that could have masked and somehow still been successful, especially rookie. Like, sure, if you plug Tom Brady in there, they're going to be successful because it's Tom freaking Brady. But for a rookie to come in and be able to be successful despite all of that going on, it makes me feel like he's already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. We got a great show for you ahead today. Jace Frederick, who covers the Timberwolves for the Pioneer Press, he's going to join us at about 1:20 later in the show today. But if you want to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call right now, 651-646-8255 here on Raised by Wolves live on AM 1500 on Score North. And so the Wolves are in action tonight, Danny. They're taking on the Los Angeles Lakers.
The LeBron-less Los Angeles Lakers. Although Rajon Rondo might be back tonight, I did see there's a possibility he returns tonight, which is a big deal for them. I mean, sure. As strange as it sounds, he's probably their third or fourth best player.
That's amazing to think about.
And Rajon Rondo, yes, the absence of LeBron has obviously impacted them winning or not winning. But they also had a stretch without Kyle Kuzma, who's their second best player, mm-hmm. without Rajon Rondo, who's third or fourth best, and now Lonzo Ball, who I don't think is very good, but he's out as well. And I mean, they're just running out of bodies at this point.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that the fact that they've kind of hung around the way they have the last couple of weeks with LeBron being out with the groin and they've had
and probably being out a little bit longer than they expected him to be out.
Yeah. And the fact that they've sort of hung around the way that they have, I mean, they're still in, I think they're a game out of the eighth playoff spot right now as we speak, but they're hanging around. And usually a team that has LeBron James, if they go a handful of games, even more without him, I mean, they sort of go into the tank. And mm-hmm. the fact that the Lakers haven't gone into the tank without LeBron James these last couple of weeks is pretty impressive.
I mean, they did fall from fourth to out of the playoff picture. Like you said, they are a game out. And the win against OKC was a really impressive win. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, they beat the Bulls, who are trash. They lost to the Cavs, which is a really bad loss. I mean, anyone losing to the Cavs right now is a bad loss just because they are a absolute dumpster fire. The Jazz is a fine loss. Beating the Pistons is a good win, and beating the Mavericks is a good win. But They and then obviously they lost to the Knicks is a bad loss. Here is not a great loss. And then
okay, so
the
I take
Thunder
back
well.
Everything I just said.
So it's they've won games that if you've got that young core, with the exception of the OKC win, which was a really good win, they've won games that they should win. And they've also lost a couple games that they should win. Like, you could make the legitimate argument that despite no LeBron James, they should be better off than they were. Now, I understand the Kyle Kuzma absence played a big part in that as well. But you could legitimately make an argument that they should have been better during this stretch without LeBron than they were, than they have been.
What do you think of Luke Walton as a coach?
I like him as a coach. I do. I think he's talented. I mean, look back at what he did. He was essentially the head coach of the Warriors the year they went 73-9.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr missed the first, I think, like 45 games or something like that.
And they were like 42.
I think they were 42 and 3 under him.
Yeah.
Think about that. 42 and 3. That is bonkers.
And that was pre Kevin Durant Golden State Warriors.
Yes. Yeah. That was peak Warriors. That was when the Warriors were still fun. Now they're not fun. That was when they were still fun. Now they're just too good to be fun. But I like him as a coach. LeBron's a tough guy to coach. Mm-hmm. Now we've seen Eric Spoelstra be successful, but it wasn't always successful at first. I mean, so much was made when they started off 9-8 or whatever. LeBron's first 17 games in Miami, it just didn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
David Black couldn't handle LeBron. Tyronn Lue, who a lot of people don't necessarily think is a great coach, he was a really good fit for LeBron because he knew how to handle LeBron. They didn't get off to the best start in the world under Lue, but he won him a title. He was a big reason as to why they won a title, and that's fairly important. And then you get to Luke Walton. I do think you have to give him a chance. I think that it's good that the Lakers don't have the same problem in terms of the unrest that the Cavs had with David Blatt when LeBron first got there. And I think that ownership in the front office in LA probably has a little bit more trust in Luke Walton than the Cavaliers ever did in David Blatt when Blatt was fired, because there was talk that he could have been fired following his very first year in Cleveland, following LeBron's first year back, that they could have made a change. And I don't think that's going to be the case. Luke here has kind of been it's unfortunate because these guys got hurt. And I think that the front office there probably overvalues some of the guys that they drafted. Like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and D'Angelo Russell, you took three guys, number two overall, back to back to back. One of them's an all-star, and the one that's an all-star, you traded. You
traded away.
Like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball have not been good enough to warrant being drafted second overall. Where D'Angelo Russell, it took some time and a change of scenery, but that guy belongs to be in the all-star game, especially after what happened last night with Victor Oladipo, because as sad as it is, he's out.
The fact that Lonzo has been very underwhelming this first year and a half or so in the league is really the big elephant in the room for me, because of all the hype that was surrounding him, and he was the number two overall pick, and then his dad being in the mix.
His
and all
dad
this
has
other
kind
stuff.
Of disappeared, though.
Oh,
I don't know.
I mean,
I
haven't seen anything from LeVar.
I don't
in a
know
while.
How much he's even around them right now, because he does have the youngest son, LaMelo, who he's currently playing at a prep school, Spire Institute, in on the east side of Ohio, like very northeast Ohio. So I don't know how much time he's spending in the Cleveland area versus how much time he's spending in beautiful Los Angeles, California, around Lonzo Ball.
651-646-8255. You're listening to Raised by Wolves on Score North on AM 1500. Manny Hill and Danny Cunningham here with you. Jace Frederick joining us in about 12 minutes. Let's go to the phones. Lyle in Brooklyn Park. Lyle, what's up?
Well, I'm wondering. I've been 70 years old now, and I've seen the Timberwolves start and all the struggles and all the things they do. What is the problem that we cannot get a championship team? Are we not paying the players enough or what?
Thanks for the call, Lyle. I think I've watched this team since 1993-94-ish was when I started really watching the NBA.
I've been alive since 1993-ish. You have to get lucky.
Yeah,
part
you have to get lucky.
Part of it involves luck. The Warriors are a dynasty in part because of luck.
Mm-hmm.
There is no question about that. If you look back at every team that's won a title since 2015, so the Warriors and the Cavs, all of them involve a lot of luck. the Cavs are lucky that LeBron James was born 45 minutes south of where they play basketball. That is the only reason they have a championship, is because LeBron James was born in Akron, Ohio. The Warriors are a dynasty because of Steph Curry's early injuries and late development, and the fact that he signed a 4-year, $11 million a year contract, because that enabled them to sign Kevin Durant. If they don't do that, they probably have one or two titles, and the NBA looks entirely different. But they got lucky. They were able to do that. The Caps spiked at the perfect time for them, and they became an even greater dynasty than they ever could have dreamed of becoming. So much of that involves luck, and the Wolves haven't gotten lucky. Like, that's part of it. Another part of it is missing draft picks and making very poor decisions, which they've done plenty of.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hiring the wrong coaches and making the wrong trades.
Or the wrong executive.
The wrong executive.
Signing Joe Smith.
Yeah. And
drafting Derek Williams.
Holding on to executives longer than they should. I mean, it's basically... it's a combination of everything. And
it's a perfect storm of crap.
Yeah, it's a perfect storm. And when you don't make enough good moves, and in the NBA, it's harder in the NBA to get out of the cellar, so to speak, than it is in any other league. I mean, you could screw up in the NFL and you might be at the bottom of, in the bottom of the standings for a few years, but if you make one or two good moves, you can find yourself right back into the mix. Your Cleveland Browns, for example,
they draft
Baker Mayfield, and look at what he's changed in just a year of being a rookie quarterback that's actually good.
How often do we see teams in the NFL go from worst to first? It happens all the time. Look, Houston Texans, I realize that Deshaun Watson got hurt last year, and that was a big reason why. But their draft position this past May or April, whenever the draft was held, was number four. It was number four overall, and they went and they just made the playoffs. Like, these things happen. Teams go from worst to first all the time in football, but it takes a little bit more development in basketball, and that's just how the game is.
Yeah, and you have to make the right decisions. If you make the wrong decisions and sign people to bad contracts, it's harder to do. It's not impossible, but it's a lot harder to dig yourself out. Jace Frederick is going to join us at 1:20 here. Jace covers the Timberwolves for the Pioneer Press. And he's a good friend of the show, the podcast that Danny and I do. So it'll be good to chat with him. With the Wolves, and we talked about this a little bit on Tuesday in the last Raised by Wolves we did for the website, scorenorth.com, with Dane Moore. The point guard position to me, Danny, is the one that I'm looking at that is just such a huge question mark for this team, not just for the rest of this season, because you have all the injuries with Tyus Jones and Derrick Rose, you know, in and out of the lineup and that sort of thing, Jeff Teague. But just the future of the position is vital, and a decision is going to have to be made one way or the other at the end of this season.
You could
maybe in the next couple of weeks before the trade deadline.
The decision's going to have to be made a couple of ways, because look at the four dudes that have logged minutes at point guard for the Wolves this season. Derrick Rose is an unrestricted free agent. Jeff Teague has a $19 million player option for next season. Tyus Jones is a restricted free agent. And Jared Bayless, who, if you would have told me in September that Jared Bayless would be hitting meaningful shots for the Wolves and then turning around and talking trash to opposing fans, I would have called you nuts. But he did that on Tuesday. Also, unrestricted free agents. So the four point guards currently on the roster could all be playing in different uniforms next year. Like, that is a legitimate possibility. I don't know how likely it is, but it's a very succinct possibility.
And a lot of that is going to depend on who the coach is going to be, who is going to be running the front office. It, you know, if Glenn Taylor is going to make a decision on who's going to run the front office, is Scott Layden going to stay around? If it's not going to be Scott Layden, is it going to be somebody else that steps in? That person's going to have to make a decision on the future. And that might depend on who that person decides to be the head coach as well. Is it going to be Ryan Saunders? Is it going to be somebody else that he might bring in from the outside?
There are so many important decisions yet to be made involving this franchise. And I think determining who your leader is off the court in terms of which executive is going to steer this ship is the most important one. I think that matters more than anything else they decide right now.
Now, the question is, what with Karl Anthony Towns being the best player on this team and the future of the franchise, basically the franchise player, is he going to have a huge impact on whoever this point guard is going to be, if it's going to be somebody that's on the roster now, or if it's going to be somebody that they have to maybe draft or try and sign in free agency or something like that, even with their limited resources that they'll have in free agency. But is he going to be the determining factor of like the type of point guard that you get? Because that's what I'm wondering.
I don't know that he's the determining factor, but I think you have to look at which player is going to bring the best out in him. The way the roster's set up right now and the way this team is, you're only going to go as far as Karl-Anthony Towns takes you. That's what it is. That's how the NBA goes. Mm-hmm. You go as far as your star players take you. We're watching it right now with the Lakers. Their star players out there not going very far. The Warriors have all the star players. They go all the way. Like, that's how it works in the NBA. You're going to go as far as Karl-Anthony Towns can take you. And getting the best out of him is priority number one if you're the Wolves, because that's the way, that's how you get the best version of your team, is having the best version of your best player. That's what you need. So having a point guard that helps bring the best out in him is very important. Now, you don't talk to him, and I don't think you ask him who he wants, right? But I think you need to have someone's game that brings the best in his game out as well.
What do you think? What type of point guard? I mean, forget about names, but what type of point guard would that be?
A guy like Tyus. I think Tyus does very well with Cat. Now, if I were running this franchise, I would make efforts to bring Tyus back next season. I don't know if they will, but I think that he's the kind of guy that helps Cat the most. I don't think it needs to be a guy that's going to look for his shot. Derrick Rose doesn't bring the best out in Cat. Derrick Rose has helped to bring a very, very good version of this team out, and they would be lost without him. But I don't think that his playing style is the very best for Cat. I think it's great to have.
And I think he's helped them win some games this year.
And I think that's why they have him playing the two a lot, too. If you can have him on the floor with Tyus and Cat, that makes Cat better. But having Derrick Rose be your point guard and the guy that needs to get all the buckets, I think that hurts Cat a little bit. But having him slide over to the two, even if he is undersized and it does hurt your defense, it helps Cat offensively.
Now, we're in this era of the NBA where it is a little bit more positionless, or you have
guys
that are doing multiple things, or they're playing multiple positions, quote unquote. I wonder if it's not so much a pure point guard that this team needs, but just multiple ball handlers who can distribute and also hit a shot if they're left open.
I think where they're hurt is that the wings aren't good ball handlers for the Wolves. Mm-hmm. The wings struggle to dribble. Andrew Wiggins is not a good ball handler. Josh Okogie is not a good ball handler yet. He can certainly develop into one, but as of right now, he's just not an NBA level ball handler or distributor. And that's something that, if that changes for him, that elevates his game to an entirely new level, and that's awesome for the Wolves, but it's not there right yet, and he's a rookie, and that's okay. He wasn't expected to be there right now,
right?
But that's another thing. If you can have wings that can pass and dribble a little bit better, it helps you.
651-646-8255, the number to get on Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill and Danny Cunningham here with you until 2 o'clock on Raised by Wolves here on AM 1500 and Score North and scorenorth.com if you're streaming. We're going to take a quick pause here. Coming up next on the other side of the break, we're going to talk with Jace Frederick, who covers the Timberwolves for the Pioneer Press. The Lakers are taking on the Wolves tonight on TNT, actually. What was it, 9:30 tip-off?
Tonight. We got a late night tonight.
Yeah,
man.
Late night. But we'll get Jace's thoughts on the Wolves at this point of the season and what's coming up for them tonight as they take on the LeBron-less Los Angeles Lakers. It's Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham here with you. And Jace Frederick joins us next.
It's hard to do the floss wearing snow pants, but that's how we feel about Minnesota sports. It makes us want to do that. We know you get it. ScoreNorth.com.
It's Raised by Wolves on the radio. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham with you on Score North on 1500. ScoreNorth.com. If you're streaming, joining us now on the program, he covers the Minnesota Timberwolves for the Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com. Jace Frederick joins us. And Jace, are you in Los Angeles? Or are you home in the Twin Cities?
Home in the Twin Cities right now, Manny.
Do you wish you were in Los Angeles, considering the temperatures today?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, just like, have you seen this next week? It's insane. I mean, like, the negative.
It's not fair.
Like, negative 20 something next week. I mean, this is going to be awful.
I'm terrified, Jace.
Yeah, you're in trouble, Danny. I told you, keep moving north was not a good life plan.
I should have got a job covering the heat or something.
There are worse jobs than that one.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
So where are you at with this team now, Jace? Because they're a game under 500 now going into this game in Los Angeles tonight. And me and Danny have talked all week about how it seems like these next handful of games before they get to the trade deadline could tell us a lot about whether or not they're going to be buyers or sellers at the deadline. Because I feel like if they can win 3-4 games in a row and are over 500 by the time the deadline comes up on February 7th, that they may be tempted to try and be buyers. But if they lose a few in a row, then they may find themselves out of it and may be more tempted to be sellers. What's your thoughts?
I find finding a situation in which they are so far out of it that they determine themselves to be sellers, I find hard to imagine, just because of the situation they're in as a franchise. It's the same situation they were in when Tibbs was there, in my opinion, just in the fact that Scott Layden's job seems far from secure heading into next year. Ryan Saunders' job, like at least as far as being the head coach, seems far from secure. So these guys, I mean, like, I think just the will to sell is not really going to be there, because if they don't make the playoffs, if they don't finish the season strong, Glenn Taylor, I could see kind of cleaning house in the front office, and I'm sure the front office knows that. So I think it would take like a mandate from Glenn Taylor to be like, hey, we need to sell at the deadline. We need to get rid of some of these pieces that we can get return for, especially maybe on these expiring contracts. Because I think if you're like Scott Layden, you're thinking, oh, I don't care what the situation is, I'm going to try to get this team to win as many games as it can, to give myself the best possibility to stay on here. Maybe it doesn't work out that way, but that's just kind of how I see it. So I would be really surprised if they're sellers, kind of regardless of how those next few weeks go, just because of the situation that they're in and kind of the limbo that they're in terms of like the front office right now.
Now, we've kind of seen it all with this team, but what would it take for Glenn Taylor to put that mandate down to be sellers?
I think they'd have to be really far. I think these things would have to be, I don't know, maybe you're like 6 games out, 7 games out. I think it would take a total tank job leading up to it, which is just hard to see them falling off a cliff like that. So I would be really surprised. Like percentage chance, I think that their sellers is like 10. I mean, I just don't see that as a route, because in talking to Glenn Taylor these last couple of years, I mean, he has no interest in like rebuilding or anything like that. Not that being a seller at the trade deadline is a rebuild, but I mean, he just wants this team to get into the playoffs. He wants them to win games. So I don't even see him kind of taking that avenue either.
So with where they're at right now, Andrew Wiggins, it's unbelievable, Jace, because he has the great game against Oklahoma City, Ryan's first game as head coach, and we're thinking, okay, maybe Ryan has found something in Andrew to unlock him to where, sure, he's not going to drop 40 every single night, but maybe this is the turning point that we're going to see with Andrew Wiggins. And it just continues to be the same sort of inconsistent play on his end, and he's still disengaged in games sometimes, and he's still not shooting the ball particularly well. And I mean, I at this point, I'm just out of ideas or options of what this team can do now going forward with him, because it seems like every option to try and get him going has been exhausted. But at the same time, with the contract being what it is, it's almost like this team is in a spot where they just have to keep trying to get him going.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually been pretty consistent in the fact that he's been so bad in a lot of games. Like, it's the games like Oklahoma right. City now where you have to be like, well, that was an inconsistent performance out of Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
The consistency has been the poor play. I mean, the poor shot selection, the inability to do anything else on the court except for score on occasion, and even doing that kind of inefficiently. He has rebounded a little bit better since Saunders became coach. So I guess maybe credit to Ryan on that one. But just in general, you just see Wiggins and just the way he plays and just like the low energy. And it's difficult to see him becoming anything more than what he is, because I mean, we haven't seen progression at all in these last few years. It'd be one thing if like he started as this guy and each year he improved a little bit, and you're like, I can see something there. It hasn't happened. I mean, if anything, he's kind of regressed in certain areas of his game, which at his age is really alarming to see. you just see it. I mean, like, it's to the point where I think the defenders of him have totally dwindled down to where it's, like, maybe a handful of people, like, even just Timberwolves fans as a whole. I don't really know what you do with him. I think just trying to move that contract in any way, shape, or form is your best route, no matter what you have to do, really, because it just seems like, how can you possibly build a team that can even just be a consistent playoff team in the Western Conference when you're eating $27, $28 million a year on a player who's really not even above replacement level for a lot of the things he does on the court? So, I mean, yeah, you can keep trying, and you have to do that as long as he's on your roster. Like, I don't know, do whatever you can. I have no idea what you would do at this point, what they haven't tried, what stone they haven't unturned, just to try to get him to, I don't know, bring a little bit more energy on a nightly basis and play a more efficient brand of basketball and do more of the little things. But I've got to think they've tried that also. I mean, I would just think at some point, whether it's this offseason or whatever, you just say, okay, whatever it takes, we've got to move on from Andrew Wiggins. Like, whatever we have to take on, whatever it is, because this isn't going to work, and it's not going to work for these next 5 years as long as he's on our roster.
Now, I know everyone wanted him to be the biggest improvement when Saunders took over, and Saunders has had 7 games now, and the OKC game was really the only good Andrew Wiggins won. What's been the biggest improvement, in your opinion, with this team under Saunders' direction?
That's a good question. They played with better pace. Not that they weren't playing under a horrible pace this year under Tibbs, but I think they're like maybe 7th right now in the NBA in pace since Saunders took over. They're taking more 3-point shots, which is always kind of a consistent improvement thing, or at least they have shown glimpses of that. But in general, their defense has been pretty horrible. And part of that can be maybe because Robert Covington was out, and it wasn't that good under Tibbs after Cove was out and even kind of injured after that really hot start after the trade. But defensively, I still think they have a lot of things to figure out. It's where I kind of question exactly what they can do moving forward here. But, you know, I think the pace has been better. And I think they're playing, at least in that respect, a little bit more like Saunders wants. But in general, it's hard to tell. I see a lot of big differences, and it still is kind of a small sample size. And I still don't know exactly how much time he's really had to implement new things. But I guess just pace and maybe a little few more outside shots, placing a little bit more emphasis on taking more threes, things like that. You can kind of see that a little bit. But like I said, it doesn't look that different of a team right now, just in general.
With the outside shots, they've had a couple games under Saunders now where they've had 40-plus attempts, or 39 and 41, I believe. And then they've had a couple games where they've kind of been in the mid to low 20s. Where do you think his kind of happy medium in that area is?
Well, if it was me, I would say like high 30s, maybe mid-30s. You know, if you took somewhere around like 34-35 a game, I think that's probably a good number. That provides you the proper spacing. But if you're taking in the 40s, like just in general, when you're in Andrew Wiggins and Josh Okogie are your wings. Now, Okogie's had some decent shooting nights, but we all know that he's not a great outside shooter. Andrew Wiggins is not a great outside shooter. It's just not really your team's strengths in general. I think like over 40 is too many. Like at that point, they're probably taking bad ones, ill-advised ones. If you can just fall somewhere in that 34, 35 range, keep teams honest, keep the floor spread, kind of open like the driving lanes, and maybe kind of keep things a little bit more spread where Cat can do some things on the interior, I think that's probably your best bet. That's probably where Saunders wants to sit. I know before asking him, and he said, you know, we want to take smart ones. We want guys to play within themselves. So I think there are certain guys where he doesn't want them taking contested looks, anything like that. But you definitely want that number higher than, you know, that mid to low 20s, you're going to lose a lot of games when you're sitting down there.
You mentioned Robert Covington, and obviously he's been out with the knee situation. And obviously, I mean, he's been missing him has been huge because we've seen how the team has performed defensively when he's been out. But how close is he to returning? Are we still a few weeks away, or is it just kind of indefinite still right now?
Yeah, there's been no timeline provider whatsoever, which is probably not good news. You know, usually like when real progress is being made and there's some like news to report, a coach will put that out there and say, hey, yeah, you know, he started doing this. And, you know, we haven't gotten really any indication on what he's been starting to do. Anything, idea when he's coming back. Saunders has been asked about it pretty consistently, and there's just been no updated timeline. Now, this is obviously the type of injury that can kind of linger for a while, and we've seen guys miss significant time with this. And I just think that the fact that we haven't heard anything back for a long time probably suggests that he's still farther away than and it'll be later rather than sooner, I guess, upon his return, which is not good for Minnesota because you can just see it. I mean, they need him both with his outside shooting, with his defense. Like, it's their two biggest areas of need. And not having him in the lineup, it really kind of hampers them. Like, there are a couple games already within this last, like, 2 weeks here where you can plan and say, hey, if they have Robert Covington, they probably beat the Spurs. They probably beat the Mavericks at home. Those are two games that they just kind of kicked away that you have to assume that they might have won those with Covington in the lineup, and there will probably be a few more like that between now and when he comes back.
So the other night in Phoenix, we saw a bit of a scuffle between Devin Booker and Gorgui. And then last night in the Utah-Denver game, there was another on-court fight. So I asked you this, who are the two players most likely tonight between the Wolves and the Lakers to get into it on the court?
That's a good question. Well, I think anytime, is Jeff Teague out for tonight's game?
Jeff Teague is questionable still.
Okay, well, if Jeff Teague is going to play, I would guess he's not playing. But whenever Jeff Teague plays, he's the most likely one to push somebody on the Timberwolves roster. We've seen that multiple times. So I guess I'll go with him on that side. Geez, I don't know. The Lakers, is it JaVale? I mean, is he the most likely guy to get in a fight?
But I feel like he might be too goofy.
Yeah, sure. He might be right on that. Maybe, does Lance ever actually get in fights? Like,
he blows in people's ears.
Yeah, right. Maybe if Rondo and Teague actually matched up with Rondo coming back tonight and Teague, if he actually plays, I could see those two getting into it. I could see maybe Rondo getting under Teague's skin and Teague pushing him around. So I'll go Rondo and Teague. And I don't know who I'd
Lance is a dark horse, maybe?
Lance is a dark horse, yeah, but, you know, he also doesn't seem like somebody who actually ends up fighting anybody very often.
He's just kind of an agitator.
You think he's more bark
exactly.
than bite?
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's kind of the guy where, like, he wants you to throw that punch, but it's on you to not do it, you know, so. and who's he blowing in the ear of? I mean, if he's blowing in the ear of Andrew Wiggins, I don't think Andrew Wiggins is going to be agitated by it or even notice it.
Well, Cat's too tall for, he can't get up to Cat's ear. Cat's just too tall for him.
Right. Yeah, so, I don't know. I guess I'll go with Teague Rondo. Teague might not even play, so that might be a horrible guess. But if they do play, I'll say Teague Rondo, and don't ask me to pick who'd win that fight because I really have no idea.
Sign me up for Gorgui against Lance Stephenson. I'm all here for that.
Maybe Gorgie's just going to become the, you know, I wouldn't even say that he did that in the Phoenix game.
He didn't do anything, really.
Yeah, the fact after he got ejected, then, you know, obviously he started talking a little bit more and whatnot, but he, on the court, I mean, he didn't do hardly anything there. It was the oddest looking fight, just in the fact that like Booker like threw something, and I mean like he pushed Gorgie's face pretty much, and then ran away. Like I mean, it was like a middle school schoolyard fight where it's like you do one thing and then you run away, and then the teacher comes and you're like, I don't know.
The best part of that,
but I enjoyed it. It was funny.
The best part of that was when Booker was trying to get back to the locker room, and the Suns security guard just had him by his jersey and his shorts, and Devin Booker looked like he was doing an off-season training build with a rubber band around
his
waist.
Yeah, exactly. I saw somebody else on Twitter said that it looked like when, you know, like when you first go outside with your dog on a leash and the dog's just trying to take off and you're just holding on for dear life. That's a pretty good analogy, too.
Oh, gosh. That's Jace Frederick of the Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com. Covers the Timberwolves. Good stuff, man. And enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Jace Frederick of the Pioneer Press joining us there. Always fun catching up with Jace. That's pretty good stuff.
Rondo. He's right about Booker, though, looking like a dog.
It's kind of like the dog that
the first time a dog realizes that he's on a leash. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, they're pulling on the
Rondo made my piece about craziest guys that could get in a fight.
Really?
I think he's crazy enough. I don't think he'd win, but he's crazy enough. Just like Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley is crazy enough to get in a fight, but he's not going to win.
I love Patrick Beverley, though. He's like
he's got some crazy.
Yeah, he's got some crazy. He's like the guy that Charles Barkley says, I'm messing with him. He's on the list.
And I want Lance to win the fight because I just want to see the air guitar is the winning celebration. That's how I want him walking off the floor, strumming that thing.
One more segment to go here on Raised by Wolves. We got some time. Give us a call, 651-646-8255. We're in the TCL Broadcast Studios. Raised by Wolves on the radio on Score North, live on AM 1500. Back in a moment.
And you are... Score North. Minnesota sports. Anytime, anywhere. ScoreNorth.com.
Okay.
All right, Raised by Wolves, final segment here on Score North. We're live on 1500. Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham. And there's a reason why the Wolves aren't the only reason why I love the NBA
what
so
a
much.
Night last night was in the association, man.
Oh my gosh, dude, like, first of all, shout out to Victor Oladipo. That's really unfortunate that he gets injured like that. And the Pacers are having a terrific season, and they're right there at the top of the Eastern Conference, right in that mix.
Number three, I believe, heading into last night. Let me just take you through a little bit of my night yesterday. So I'm sitting at my counter in my apartment, and to peel back the curtain here a little bit into my personal life, someone tried to steal my identity yesterday. Like, not joking whatsoever.
Yeah.
Legitimately, someone tried to steal my identity and did a very good job of screwing up my life for the present being. So last night was a rough night in the sense that I am in a terrible mood. I'm watching the Pacers-Raptors game while in this terrible mood, and Victor Oladipo's knee just explodes. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. Like, how's this night just going to get worse? Like, because I hate seeing guys get injured, especially injuries where you know they're bad. Like, anytime a trainer runs onto the floor and immediately just covers a body part with a towel, you know it's bad.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. I was watching that live on League Pass last night, and it was very similar to the Caris LeVert injury that happened here when Brooklyn was in town earlier this year, where the trainer immediately ran out, called for a stretcher immediately, and covered the body part so the player could not see it.
Yeah.
You know that's bad news when that happens, and that's exactly what happened for Victor Oladipo last night. I feel terrible about it.
Yeah, and just the fact, I mean, you never want anybody to get injured regardless of the situation.
But if someone, like, tweaks their ankle, I don't feel bad.
Right, but it's in this particular situation, and then you factor in the Pacers are having a really, really good season. He's a big part of it. He's basically their best player, and then he goes down, and it's like, you're watching the Pacers, you're thinking, hey, maybe they can make some noise in the playoffs. And now it's just kind of like, they're without him, they'll still make the playoffs. They'll still be a good team. But
yeah, they'll make the playoffs in the East, but they're not going to win a series.
Yeah, they're not going to make any noise
now without him.
Yeah, it's just it's tough and unfortunate. But a couple other things around the league. So Blake Griffin and the Pistons, they picked up a win last night, right?
And a needed win.
A much-needed win. And Blake, I'm just trying to play the audio here, but it wasn't
over
working.
Over the Anthony Davis-less New Orleans Pelicans, they only won 98-94.
And so the Pistons needed the win, and they got the victory, and Blake Griffin's doing the post-game interview and everything, and he's just talking about how, you know, guys have got to, we got to pick things up here, and we need to be more serious, and we need to be more focused, and all of this stuff. And he's doing, as he's talking about all of this stuff, here comes Reggie Jackson, just photobombing the entire interview.
Amazing.
Just like sliding in between, you know, Blake and the interviewer and everything, and just making these goofy faces and everything. It's just hilarious that Blake is talking about being serious and being focused. And
it's perfect.
There's their starting point guard just being a goofball.
It's perfect. It could not have happened any better. It was absolutely amazing. Jonathan Harrison, producer of Score North Live with Matthew Collar and Mackie and Judd with Rami, actually DM'd it to me on Twitter last night after it happened because I wasn't watching that game. I really had no interest in watching a Pelicans team without Anthony Davis play or just the Pistons in general. So I wasn't watching that game, and he DM'd it to me. He was like, dude, this is talk about terrible timing. And I respond, no, talk about amazing timing. That was perfect. It could not have gone any better than that. And then what happened in the Garden last night? James Harden, man. Over his last five games, James Harden is averaging 52.2 points per game unassisted. None of his points in the past five games have been assisted.
Because he's getting all the assists, too.
And none of his teammates can do anything.
Right.
I read a stat the other day, yesterday actually, before yesterday's game, of James Harden's last, it was either 47 or 50 assist opportunities, 11 of them had been converted by his teammates. 11.
He's going to win the MVP again, isn't he?
And I don't understand how you can criticize him right now for doing this. The Rockets have no other option to win. And it's not as if he's setting guys up with tough shots and they're taking them. These dudes are wide open.
Yeah, like, they're getting double teamed.
Yes, they are taking three pointers with 7 to 8 feet of airspace between them and the next closest defender, and they cannot hit them. That's why James Harden is not averaging a triple double right now, because his teammates just cannot make shots.
He's going to win the MVP again, isn't he?
He deserves to.
Yeah.
I don't think it's close right now. Giannis has been great this year. But James Harden is the NBA MVP right now for a second year in a row. And here's my opinion. If you're going to give the guy the MVP the year before, which he deserved, someone has to take it from him the next year. Giannis has been great. He hasn't been great enough to take it away from this. The dude is doing stuff offensively we haven't seen ever.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable.
It's interesting. At the start of the year, like a preseason into the first week of the season, guess for the MVP, Giannis was my guess.
Giannis has been the hot guess for 2 years now.
And then as the season sort of progressed and watching the Raptors get off to their great start, I thought, okay, Kawhi.
Kawhi doesn't play enough games.
Yeah. And then you know, Steph is going on a tear, and I'm thinking, Steph
belongs in the conversation.
But the way James Harden has been playing for basically like the last month and a half.
It's unprecedented.
It's unbelievable.
We haven't seen anyone do anything remotely close to this since Kobe Bryant in 2005-06.
Yeah. Just the way he's scoring and being able to
do
it consistently, it's unbelievable. Let's go to the phone, 651-646-8255. It's Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill and Danny Cunningham here with you on Score North on 1500. Sam in St. Paul, what's happening?
Hey, guys. So I'm wondering if and when Rocco comes back from his injury. I know bone bruises suck, but when he comes back, do you think Andrew Wiggins should maybe Saunders have him come off the bench, maybe to, I don't know, change his attitude, maybe something like that?
I don't know that that'll change his attitude. We've tossed this around before, and Sam, I like that idea of bringing Andrew Wiggins off the bench. And thank you for the call. I think that he's someone that maybe he needs that prod or that kick from behind to try and motivate him a little bit, because nothing else has worked. I think he started every game in his career. I could be mistaken.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever come off the bench at all.
Maybe try it. I know it's not a great look to have your max contract player not as a starter. Like, that's not a good look. But having your max contract player underachieve like this isn't a good look either. At this point, I think it's worth a try, Sam. I don't know that it's something the Wolves actually would do. But I think it's worth a try, and you know, if Okogie continues to play well, and he's been up and down, and he's going to continue to be up and down because he's a rookie, and that's what 99% of all rookies that have ever played in the NBA do. They're up and down, they're learning. He's still learning, but if Okogie can give you something similar to what he's been giving you lately, then maybe have Andrew Wiggins be your sixth man. But that further complicates, what do you do with Derrick Rose then? Because Derrick Rose has been phenomenal as your sixth man. And that complicates that position. And then do you have too many people that need the ball in their hands to be successful coming off your bench? Because the reason Derrick has been so successful is because he can dominate that second unit.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of having Andrew, and we've brought it up before on the the podcast before about having him, you know, just trying it at least.
And Sam brings up a good point in terms of motivation. Maybe it does. Maybe. Yeah. We don't know. I mean, we've talked about it from basketball perspectives, but maybe it is a motivating thing for him.
Yeah, and at this point, it's like, I like the idea of it just because at this point, everything else that we could find and think of to explain why Andrew Wiggins has not turned the corner as a player and has not been as good as we, you know, so many fans and the team and all that stuff has hoped he would be, all of these reasons have been exhausted. Coaching changes, scheme, players, you know, being traded. You know, when Jimmy first got here, that was the big talker, was that Jimmy was going to help Andrew Wiggins. He was going to take some pressure off Andrew Wiggins. Jimmy was going to take the toughest defensive assignment, so Andrew didn't have to do that. It didn't matter. Nope. Then the Jimmy drama became itself, and then it was, we got to get Jimmy out of here because he's hurting Wiggins. He's stunting Wiggins' development. Well, now Jimmy's gone. They've made the coaching change now.
They've done everything feasible.
They've done everything.
At some point, it's the player. Mm-hmm. Is it the player now? Probably. I mean, what else can they do? I think bringing him off the bench, maybe that does serve as a motivating factor. Maybe it helps your team. Maybe it gives you some scoring. And truthfully, maybe it lets him go against some lesser players in other second units.
Allow him to cook some second units.
And maybe that gets some confidence up. Maybe that's something that happens.
It'll be interesting to see when Covington comes back. And the tough part about this, too, is that we just don't know when Covington's going to come back.
We have no idea.
And you wonder, too, are we going to get close enough to the end of the season and he hasn't come back yet, and they just say, you know what, we'll just shut him down for the rest of the year.
I don't think it'll be that long. Like, I don't think this is something that's going to keep him out until March.
I would hope not.
I would be surprised if he plays in the month of January at this point, but I think he'll be back sometime in February if I had to bet on it.
Maybe after the All-Star break, something like that.
So, late February, I think, is a very reasonable spot, and maybe even a conservative spot for him to come back.
Yeah, and the other part of that, too, with just getting him back, is I want to see what Ryan Saunders can do with sort of a full roster, because Covington is just one guy, but he's a big part of... When they've played well, he's been a big part of it.
You can argue he's the second most important piece to their winning.
Yeah.
That Karl Anthony Towns is the first. You can argue that Robert Covington is not the second most talented guy, but is the second most influential player to winning on that roster.
So Seth, our social media guy here at Score North, sent out a tweet to all of us about the ratings are down on TNT, on TNT games this year by about 22%. Now, I think a big part of that is, I mean, LeBron playing on a West Coast team, but
that's
also
a huge part of
it. But also missing, he's missed a lot of games the last few weeks. He hasn't played in a few weeks. I think that's a big part of it too. But I also wonder if people like you and I, NBA nerds, people who love the league, we're going to watch it regardless. But I wonder if some of the casual fans are checking out.
I think so, because how many LeBron fans are there in New York, in Cleveland, in Miami still, just on the East Coast, that they can't afford to stay up till 10:30 to watch the start of his game?
Right.
It's tough for me with a 9:30 start some nights for me to be able to watch a West Coast game.
We're going to get that tonight.
Like, these games are not fun for fans. They don't like being up until... I mean, on the East Coast, you're up until 1 o'clock in the morning watching these games. You can't function like that if you work a 9-to-5 and just have a normal American day job. That's just not how it works. That's a big reason why. If you look at the power in the NBA, who are the teams people care about? The Bucks are fun, but nationally, I don't think people care about them a ton. Right. The Raptors are not an American team. A lot of people here don't care. People care about the Warriors. People care about the Lakers. They will always care about the Lakers, no matter how good or bad they are. But the fact that you have a franchise people already care about and the player that people care about the most in the league in the same place, that takes away from another draw. Because people are always going to tune in to watch the Lakers, no matter if they're the 19-win Lakers from a couple years ago or if they're this Lakers. Without LeBron, they're still going to watch this team. Then you've got Oklahoma City, a Western Conference team. All the teams that people care about, with maybe the exception of Boston, who has underachieved this year, are in the Western Conference or on the West Coast, period. That's tough. You don't have the balance of power because your two best teams in the East, no one cares about. Giannis is great and he's loved internationally, but I don't think people care about the Milwaukee Bucks as a team across this country. I just don't. No one in this country cares about the Toronto Raptors. Everyone in Canada does, but no one here. That's a problem for ratings. And their ratings don't count in America.
Yeah.
Just a little pull back the curtain secret. The ratings don't count here. So if they made the finals, TV executives would be not happy.
Follow him at Real D Cunningham on Twitter. Follow me at Manny Hill 84. Thanks for listening. Score North Live with Matthew Collar is coming up next. This has been Raised by Wolves on Score North.